Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but don't...
Yeah, we did. Started to burn too many things we found. That's the Gloria Starr Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song. We're coming to you on the eve of destruction here, the last days of the Republic, I suppose you could call them, the days when we're about to see a takeover in Washington of a purely fascist government, something unlike anything we've seen in American history. We've had a lot of conservative administrations. This one, as we embark on the era of Donald Trump in the White House, something is just almost surreal to say. We look like we're heading into a kleptocracy, an administration run basically for the pure greed and personal profit of the people who are in charge, not only in the White House, but also in both houses of Congress. They have hit the ground running, as we expected, and have passed right off the gate, a couple of bills that will utterly decimate our environment. I get this email here from the League of Conservation Voters. Two terrible bills on the House floor. I guess they haven't passed yet. Massive threats to the drinking, to the air and the water, the public lands. This is from the League of Conservation Voters, generally a pretty good group. The Rains Act and the Midnight Rules Act, you can write the League of Conservation Voters if you want, from Gene Karpinski, somebody I've known over the years, just absolutely going to decimate environmental regulations. The status of our government now in the United States of America is unlike anything we've seen before. Because it also includes an even split on the Supreme Court, which is about to go directly to the Republicans, to the extreme right wing. This is a government. I suppose you could say when Ben Franklin emerged from the Constitutional Convention in 1787 in Philadelphia, the Constitutional Convention was held in an absolute secret. They had armed guards at the door. As many as 59, I don't remember the maximum number of people who were in the Constitutional Convention. I have been in that hall, by the way. If you ever go to Philadelphia, it's quite an amazing place to see. And as he emerged, Franklin was asked, "What kind of government are we now going to have?" And he replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." And clearly we have not. This is not a republic or a democracy. It is an oligarchy. It is a government completely run by the super rich, and not merely the rich, not merely the very rich, as would have come in with Hillary Clinton, but the super rich, the super, super rich. There's nobody in the upcoming Trump cabinet that it's worth less than, millions and millions of dollars. And nobody's making any bones about this. So am I hearing Lila Garrett? Are you there? Lila, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's a truly great entrance onto a radio show, I got to say.
Yeah.
We're joined by...
You were discussing climate change, and it's kind of cold here, so...
Yes, it is. We are both in Los Angeles. although a set of mountains separates us. Lila is on Wilshire Boulevard, and I'm out in the valley. I just did Lila's show with her, her wonderful show, Connect the Dots on KPFK. Lila Garrett, how long have you been at Pacifica KPFK?
I think about 13 years.
We have a wonderful rated show. I think it's a wonderful show. I think it's one of the top rated, if not the top rated talk shows in Zillerton on Pacifica. And we're discussing, as you and I did earlier in the day, the coming of the fascist Trump junta. I have to say that if you really want to understand who Donald Trump is and how he got to power, you have to look through the history of the Central Intelligence Agency and the people that put in power in other countries around the world since World War II. Trump is merely the payback for people like Pinochet, Mobutu in the Congo, Somoza in Nicaragua, just endless dictators after dictators that have taken power on the presumption being anti-communist or whatever, and serving, of course, American corporate interests, and they proceeded to rule and with an iron fist, not a trace of democracy, and to steal as many billions of dollars as they could get their hands on. Suharto in Indonesia, you know, the list goes on and on. And the Greek dictatorship. And so now we have one of these guys, Donald Trump, who would have been perfectly at home in a third world country, having been put into power by the Central Intelligence Agency, walking in with a very large bank account needing to be filled, and no scruples whatsoever about democracy or anything else like that. Now, I was just mentioning that I just got an email from the League of Conservation Voters listing a couple of totally catastrophic, suicidal anti-environmental bills that the all-Republican House and Senate are about to pass, and we go from there. Now, you had things you wanted to talk about in terms of how do we relate to all this. I mean, I know you're deeply depressed. Why don't you tell us what you're thinking, and then we can get into things that we can talk about what people can do.
Right. Well, I think I'll start with what people can do, in my opinion, first, and that is that we have to recognize that there is no hiding place for us, that if we want to take our country back, as the expression goes, if we want to have a semblance of democracy, it has to be up to the grassroots, because we've learned after all these years we cannot depend on the Democrats, because the Democrats are really split. And I wouldn't say they're split down the middle. They're split in favor of those who are obligated to the people who elected them, because since Citizens United, elections are bought. They, right. if they aren't made, they're bought. And the Democrats are as guilty of being bought as almost as guilty as the Republicans. What Trump is doing is so extreme that it's almost like a cartoon. You were talking about the climate a little while ago, and the abuse of the climate and the climate deniers. And I was just looking here at the list of people who Trump has in his cabinet and associated with his cabinet, and the one thing they have in common more strongly than anything else is, as climate deniers, he has Rex Tillerson for his Secretary of State nominee, and Rex Tillerson is the CEO and chairman of ExxonMobil, which means he has literally built his career on oil and gas. What does that tell you? He has Scott Pruitt, who is the nominee to lead the Environmental Protection Agency. That's the EPA. And he is a renowned climate change denier with extremely close ties to oil, gas, and fracking companies. But the funniest thing about him is that as the Oklahoma Attorney General, Pruitt fought for more fracking in his state. and he's currently trying to sue the EPA to block the Obama administration Clean Power Plan. So the effect is that if he gets the job with the Environmental Protection Agency, he is suing himself. You hear about that?
Yeah, that'd be good.
And then the Rick Perry, who's a nominee to lead the Department of Energy, but need we say more about him? He's a friend of the former, governor of Texas. He's a friend of big oil and prominent climate change denier. As the government of Texas, the top officials under Perry reportedly censored references to climate change in an official state report on sea level rise. During his ill-fated 2012 presidential campaign, Perry couldn't remember what the DOAE was called. And once he remembered, he said it's one of the federal agencies he plans to eliminate. Now he's going to be head of it.
Well, he's going to change it from DOE to DOA, dead on arrival.
Exactly. And this Ryan Zink, who's a nominee to lead the Department of Interior, has said that climate change isn't the proven science, and he believes that American energy independence is more important than combating climate change. I repeat, how do you have energy independence while you deny climate change? It actually is, you know what it is? It's a manipulation. It's a snub. It's thumbing his nose, Donald Trump's nose, at the American people.
Right. Of course, the only way you get energy independence while fighting climate change is to go 100% renewable, and that's the last thing on these guys' mind.
Exactly. And now, you know, having failed to accomplish what they hoped to accomplish, and that is getting rid of the Ethics Committee, because that was their first, they came in loaded for bear with that, and they wanted to stop the Independent Ethics Committee, which was weak to begin with. They were stopped from doing that, presumably by Trump, because what they wanted to do was put the Congressional Ethics Committee in the hands of the Congress. You know, it's the
right.
Same
well,
thing
I think I think that was an error. There was a slight error. They thought instead of getting rid of ethics, they were getting rid of ethnics, and that this would have eliminated all the Hispanics and blacks from the country. But they misunderstood what they were doing.
That's right. Well, you know, I mean, it's perfect. And then I'm reading a piece here on what they've withdrawn their demand to get rid of the Independent Ethics Committee. They've withdrawn that, and now they're concentrating on getting rid of Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security. And Donald Trump swore that he was for keeping Medicare and for keeping Social Security as it was. And now let's see if he keeps his word. I think really, for me, Paul Ryan, first of all, he is saner than Trump. Trump operates, you know, like a demented child. My apologies to demented children. But he acts as though everything must respond to his need, you know, to massage his ego. If you don't massage his ego, you know, you're out of it. excuse me, Paul Ryan is a different story. He really belongs to the Koch brothers. He's the Speaker of the House, and he's been pushing a lie that's disgusting even by his own standards. He claims that the Affordable Care Act has hurt Medicare's finances when the exact opposite is true. And Ryan says we need to destroy Medicare in order to save it, and he's getting away with it. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's a terrifying prospect. The destruction of Medicare and Social Security are absolutely terrifying prospects, and the American people really needs to rise up. I mean, those programs are proven. They're absolutely essential to the well-being of the country. If anything, everybody should have Medicare. I mean, that was, of course, the great failing of both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Clinton failed altogether to get a medical program in, and Obama gave us Obamacare, which is, you know, a mixed bag at best, where we should have had universal health care, as do all the other industrial countries in the world.
Right. I think that maybe Obamacare is not going to be so easy to get rid of. First of all, it's good for the insurance companies because now they have raised their prices. They doubled and tripled and quadrupled their prices in order to have medical insurance now that Obamacare is there as an alternative. And, you know, Obamacare, while it's good for the 20 million people who are lower income, it's incredibly bad for the middle class, and for those of us, you know, most Americans, very, very rich Americans, of course, have nothing to worry about. They can afford whatever, you know. But the very, very poor are somewhat helped by the fact that now you don't, even if you have a pre-existing condition, you can get health care. And if you're very, very poor, you can get health care. But for those of us who are in the middle, it's disastrous. So
yeah, and the precondition thing, that was the one uncontestable victory of Obamacare, was allowing people to be covered. But other than that, Obamacare is a disaster. And
it is a disaster, but it's not a disaster for the same reasons that the Bush people, I mean, that was a Freudian slip, that the Trump people considered a disaster. It was a disaster because it didn't cover, you know, enough of us. That's why we think of it as a disaster. They think of it as a disaster because they think that 20 million is too many for them to cover. So they have absolutely... on every level, their motivation is not the good of the people. It's the
right.
good
well,
of the top percentage of 1%.
Well, I think it's very simple. I think everybody in the United States should have exactly the same medical program plan that the Congress has. And
absolutely.
And that'll be very simple, and they can fund it with the defense, the military budget, and there's no problem.
You know, I wanted to mention to you and to your listeners that there are a lot of grassroots movements happening now. The grassroots is really activated, and that is a very healthy thing to see. For example, on the Medicare and Social Security business, Senator Sanders is organizing a National Day of Action on Sunday, January 15th. And rallies will be held around the country demanding that Trump keep his promise and pledge to veto all cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. So I guess the thing to do is to look it up and find out where that rally would be. There's an organization called Social Security Works. I think if your listeners log on to that, they can find that out. Social Security Works.
Okay, that's good, and we know it does. I mean, I'm 71. I've been getting Social Security. It's a great program. Medicare is a great program. Medicaid saves millions of lives. And, you know, these fascists who are taking power, they just don't care about anybody at the very rich, except the very rich. We're talking with Lyle Garrett, the fabulous, legendary host of Connect the Dots on KPFK on the Pacifica Network in Los Angeles. I was on her show earlier today, and we're discussing the great, what's that word, Nakba. I think the disaster, that's what the Arabs call the coming of Israel. This is a Nakba for America. And I put out on your program my thought that two most important things that we should be doing are, number one, to get an actual election system in this country where people's votes are actually counted and people
right.
of color are not stripped en masse. And number two, to go 100% renewable. This is my biggest fear of the Trump administration, is that they're going to let these old nuclear power plants run wild. They're going to subsidize them. These things are falling apart. I am terrified of the 99 reactors in the United States of America, including the two at Diablo Canyon in California, surrounded by earthquake faults, and, of course, the two at Indian Point near our studio in New York, also undermined by or underlaid by earthquake faults. Well, Lila, what's on your agenda for opposing the world of Donald Trump here?
Well, God, it's such a big agenda. I don't know where to start, but I think that the vote is the place to start. Election protection, as you call it, is the way to start, because people are very cynical about voting. You know, millions of people didn't vote, and sometimes we look at them scornfully, but it's very understandable. They say our vote means nothing, and in many cases, their vote does mean nothing. Here you have Hillary Clinton, who actually won the popular vote by about 3 million. 3 million. And she's not the president of the United States. Instead, there's something called an electoral college, which became obsolete, 200, 300 years ago? And that aside, I think that people have to understand that the electoral college is one of the most evil things that we are still being forced to live with, that we've ever encountered. The way that it was conceived is that the southern states, excuse me, the plantation owners, wanted control of the election. They didn't want a republic. They just wanted it to appear to be a republic. So they came up with a rule that allowed each slave to be counted as 3/5 of a person. God, I'm sorry about the coughing. And as a result, they had a majority, and that's how the Electoral College was born.
Yes, and we have had six presidents of the United States who have been put into power after losing the election among the eligible voters, people who actually voted. Starting with Thomas Jefferson in 1800. Historians don't generally talk about the 1800 election, but in fact, without the 3/5 bonus, John Adams would have been reelected. It's never discussed. And I want to say also, by the way, since you mentioned Hillary Clinton, I have never seen a more total disappearing act of any politician in American history than Hillary Clinton after this election. I mean, you know, the day that she never said a word about the Electoral College. She never said a word about the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who were disenfranchised. She never said a word about having won in the exit polls in Florida, North Carolina, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. All she did later, I mean, a week or two later, however long it was, she gave a speech angrily saying that Putin didn't like her, and that's about it. Have I missed anything, Lila? Have we heard anything from Hillary Clinton?
No, but I'm not crazy about Hillary Clinton. She was much, much of a hawk for me. I mean, she wanted to have that no-fly zone over Syria, and Russian planes go over Syria all the time. So what happens? You shoot down a Russian plane, and suddenly you have World War III. No, she was much too much of a hawk, as far as I was concerned, and she was too locked into corporate America. But I can understand that she's in trauma. I mean, it was here she wins by 3 million votes, and she's not president. What is going on here?
Well, I got to say, with all due respect, if she was unable to react to this, she was not fit to be president. I mean, come on. You campaign for she's basically been campaigning to become president for 16 years.
That's
since
true.
She won with Bill. And it was always a presumption that she was going to run. I mean, she ran, it was 24 years ago that Bill Clinton was elected president in 1992. There was always a presumption, I'm sure, that at some point she would run. And she did run against Barack Obama. She's been a public servant, and I disagree with much that she's done, but she is a very hardworking person. I will never forget, in the middle of the campaign, Barack Obama came out, gave a heartfelt speech about Hillary Clinton, and said she never quits. And, as you know, she never, whatever else, she never gives up. And she just, God, disappeared.
Yeah, well, she didn't say a word. If we're going to be fair, you know, if she came out and complained now, it would sound like sour grapes. The thing that kills me is that the Clintons are going to the inauguration, and so are the Bushes.
Well, I'm sure Jimmy Carter will be there, and Obama will be there, and, you know, and Satan will be there.
And the Obamas are going. They're all going.
Of course.
Because when the time comes, yeah, when power takes over, too many people roll over. And that's why it's in our hands at the at the grassroots level to either protect ourselves and our country, or our country is not going to be protected. First of all, you know, Putin is right about one thing. He said they tried to hold out a hand of friendship to the United States. First of all, they're not a communist country anymore. So that should have delighted us. But it's as though we miss the old Cold War, because we have a permanent war economy. And when we had a Cold War with Russia for all of those years, there seemed to be no reason not to have a permanent war economy. That was a huge excuse for our economy.
Right. Well, the thing about the war, the Cold War, it was good for the defense industry, for the military industry, not defense.
That's right.
It was good for business. And, Bill Clinton, when he came to power in 93, and, you know, after the 92 election, basically inherited what should have been the biggest windfall in American history, which was the end of the Cold War, and then combined with the rise of the computer revolution, and he did absolutely nothing. And what are we going to remember Bill Clinton for? Everybody knows Monica Lewinsky. That's it. I mean, the only thing he really accomplished was a national debate on oral sex. And I think Hillary would have been a better president than Bill was. She was a more serious person. I was impressed. You know, she was a terrible candidate because she's just such a straight arrow. And I think she would have been a very hardworking, you know, by the book kind of president. I would have disagreed with 99% of what she was going to do. But for her to just flat out not say anything about the obvious theft of this election, it still staggers me, frankly. You know,
wow.
I mean, Gore went to the Supreme Court, although he didn't really say anything substantial. Kerry completely disappeared, and now she's completely disappeared. So to me, the Democratic Party, forget about it. And if they wind up with this guy, you know, there's talk, I know, Lila, you're going to queue over, you probably heard this already, there's talk of making Rahm Emanuel the head of the Democratic Party. I mean,
he was very important in the Democratic Party. He was. When he became the chief advisor to the president, to Obama, before that he was a big leader in the Democratic Party.
Well,
and
he's an awful guy.
You know, as corrupt as anybody in the Republican Party.
Well, the one thing you need to know about Rahm Emanuel is, as mayor of Chicago, he fired 1,000 teachers and hired 1,000 cops. That's Rahm Emanuel. So there you go.
Chicago has more charter schools than any other state in the union under Rahm Emanuel.
To that, total disaster. So
yeah.
I remember, I'll never forget this, Lila, we were talking about Trump coming in, and you had a phrase that I'll never forget. You said, "This is when the smart Jews get out," referring to the Hitler coming
That's
to power.
Right.
What, I mean, do you still think that? And where are we going to go?
Well, I said that under Hitler, it was at this point that the smart Jews got out. Under Trump, I think at this point, the smart Muslims, or the smart Hispanics, the smart blacks and the smart Jews get out because
yeah,
they
but where?
Them all.
I mean, in
well,
19...
you know, that's the problem. There's Costa Rica. There's Ireland, which is a sweet little country. I've been there. I mean, there's Scotland where it's too cold and wet. I'm half kidding here, but there used to be the Scandinavian countries before they started to get so right wing. And you know, no country wants any homeless people anymore. So the world is a very unwelcoming place at the moment. Again, a reason for the grassroots to take over and protect their own. You have to admit that Hillary was better on immigration than Bush. But then,
Bush. Of course, in some ways, it seemed to me, and especially now, that between Hillary and Trump, the choice was between a war with Russia or China. I mean, Trump is really going to ramp it up against the Chinese. I mean, who are these nuclear weapons supposed to defend us from? If Putin is applauding the American buildup of nuclear weapons, who's the enemy? I mean, is it China? I guess, who else is there? Patagonia?
Well, I think he's applauding Americans' development of nuclear weapons because his best friend now is Trump and the American right wing. And I worried about war with Russia under Hillary. Now with this with this comradeship between Russia and the United States, I worry about them getting together and waging war against China.
Yeah,
because these people are really out of their minds completely.
They are completely nuts. I will tell you, by the way, that the combined population of the United States with Russia, if you give it about 300 million each, is still only about 40% the population of China. So, but you know, it's a nightmare all around. I cannot believe, none of us can believe what's happening. There really is nowhere to run. I mean, even if we had, in 1933, the Jews could go to China, they could go to India, they could go to the United States. Here, this time, I don't see anywhere where people can run away. And, you know, what good is it? So democracy, election protection, and renewable energy. I think those are the two things we really got to push. Greg Powers, are you going to be joining us here? Greg, are you with us? Not yet. Bob Strakis? Well, stay on with me a while longer. These two guys are going to show up. We want to talk further. What do you think, Lila, is the very – what is your number one fear with Donald Trump taking power?
Fascism. Fascism. I have in front of me, Harvey, a full-page ad that was in – the New York Times just yesterday, and this half of the page says in giant letters, "No!" exclamation point. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. Now, when you first read that, you say, oh, well, we can't use the word fascist. It's a pejorative word. People think you're overdoing it, and they dismiss you.
Okay.
And... Oh, I'm sorry. Is Greg Palast with us now?
He's with us, yeah. But
Greg Palast is definitely with you now.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about this ad another time.
Elvis has entered the room.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Lila, you, me, and Greg, we were at dinner last night, and Greg was taking issue with that ad, and we also had an Asner who was the signer of that ad.
Right.
What do you guys think, the two of you think, of shall we say, mainstream or certainly more acceptable use of the word fascist to describe the Donald Trump regime? When the term fascist was used to talk about George W. Bush, for example, people really rejected it. They thought it was inappropriate and not accurate. But this ad, which was accepted, much to my surprise, by the New York Times, flat out calls Donald Trump a fascist. Is it accurate, Greg Powers, and is it useful?
Well, I think it's very useful. I think first of all, the ad is very well written, and it defines what a fascist is. And by the time you're through with it, you understand who you're dealing with. But I don't think Greg agrees with that.
Greg, what do you think?
I don't disagree, but be careful. The New York Times didn't use the word fascist or even allow someone to write an editorial with the word. They accepted they accepted ad money, and so they didn't censor it out of an ad. That's about as bold as they've gotten. Fascist is a term I'm very concerned with using because it just turns off people immediately to what you're saying. But on the other hand,
No one reads the full ad,
including most of the people who signed it. But that's besides the point. But you know, it could well be true. We'll see. It looks as bad as the ad says. That is, if you consider fascism the lockup of corporate power with government power overwhelming the political power of the people. That's the simple definition of fascism, and that's certainly what we see growing like kudzu within the nascent Trump administration. And you know, my film is as much about the billionaires who are buying this government as it is about vote theft. That's why you know, my film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, is subtitled A Tale of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. So I think it's not an unfair description at all. My only question about the ad is what were they proposing to do? That's still the open question.
We were just talking about the fact that there has been a re-energizing of the grassroots. For example, Code Pink, which is a wonderful peace group and which is against the permanent war economy, permanent war policy, and so on. And they're very, very visible. They have a whole agenda from now until the inauguration of things to do, places to go. You go to codepink.org, CODEPINK, all one word, .org, and it lists various organizations to join, various marches, various demonstrations, and that's what we need to be doing. That's what we need to be doing. And Harvey was saying on my show that if he were to pick one cause, one thing to concentrate on, it would be election protection. How do you feel about that, Greg?
Well, I just made a movie about it, so I must be feel strongly about it. And we're updating the movie, in fact, on which you can get at Amazon for a couple bucks, by the way. The whole point of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy is I predicted exactly how Donald Trump would steal the election, and he did it exactly to prediction. He did not win. He did not win everyone knows he didn't win the popular vote, but he didn't win those primary states either. And he used, and his minions, and the GOP, not necessarily even to help Trump, but the GOP was not afraid to use some of the most vicious Jim Crow tactics to purge the voter rolls of voters of color, to lock them out of the voting booths, and to otherwise not count even the votes that were cast.
Bob Patrakis, who joined us? Bob Patrakis, not with us. Okay. Well, you know, as I make clear to Greg, my life's ambition is to be in one of Greg's movies. We haven't been able to pull that off yet. But, you know, if I were to say anything, and Best Democracy Money Can Buy is a great movie,
well,
very, very powerful.
Yeah.
Very important.
Actually, we were going to use you in that scene where we needed the, the young lady in the bikini serve me a pina colada. But we had to use Miss Bad Penny. I know that Harvey tried out for that part, but, you know, we had to destroy that film.
Yeah. So if I was to say anything about this film, I would basically say that, look, everything that happened in 2016 also happened in 2000. And we were very well warned by Greg, by Beth Harris, by the things that Bob Patrakis and I wrote about the 2004 election. We knew that the Electoral College was a problem. That's how George W. Bush became president. We knew that the voter rolls were stripped in Florida, and that's what they did nationwide in 2016. We knew that the electronic voting machines were going to be flipped, and that's again what was done in 2016. You know, the so-called liberal Democrats spent 16 years screaming at Ralph Nader for daring to run for president. I will say right now that if Ralph Nader had not run for president in Florida 2000, and everybody who voted for Ralph Nader had voted instead for Al Gore in 2000, George W. Bush still would have won the presidency. I mean, they would have found a way to rig it,
that's
reality. And so now we have, all of a sudden, everybody's all geschreckt about, that's a Jewish word, by the way, crazy about Trump coming into power. He did it by stealing the Electoral College. He did it by disenfranchising millions of people, as Greg shows in The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. He did it by flipping the electronic voting machines, as Bob Fitrakis and I have shown repeatedly. Okay, and why is everybody surprised? And now, just like 2000, when they screamed at Ralph Nader and did nothing about these three basic issues, now in 2016, they're screaming at Putin, for God's sake, and still doing. Did Hillary come out? Did Hillary Clinton done this, Bob Fitrakis? Did Hillary Clinton come out and do any of these things? Did she call for the end of the Electoral College? Did she participate in the recount that you and Jill Stein so bravely participated with? And did she do anything to change the voter registration situation that Greg shows in his film? Bob Fitrakis, did I miss something, or can you tell us?
She called for a new designer gown for the inauguration.
God. I mean, so we will have, you know, now 4 or 8 years of Donald Trump, and then someone else is going to come along, maybe even worse. Hard to imagine, but it could be Paul Ryan. Well, I think Paul Ryan will be way worse than Donald Trump, by the way. And you're going to wind up with these three problems still unresolved, not to mention gerrymandering and money in politics. But we don't even have to go there because this is the presidency. The Electoral College, the stripping of the voter rolls, the flipping of electronic voting machines. Is anybody out there from the Democratic Party talking about any of this, Bob?
Let's see, in the Democratic, I think there's, wasn't there an announcement that four people are going to make a challenge at the beginning of Congress when they open the electoral votes? So there are a few, and I know one of them is on voter suppression, but there are a few reps that are going to actually raise the issue.
Greg Palast, this is Greg Palast. I can tell you that the Congressional Black Caucus, as they rose up in 2000 and 2004, and they're going to act now. You do have African-American congressmen who are ready to step forward. Not all of them. For example, we have Kamala Harris just elected in New York, out of California, as our senator out here. And she's so far silent on the issue of vote suppression, because she's part of the Democratic machine that basically suppressed the Sanders vote. So she's kind of sensitive about bringing up the issue herself. But the rest of the Congressional Black Caucus, Alcee Hastings, the dean of the Black Caucus, has already marched. He took my film and my investigative reports for Rolling Stone and put them in the hands of Loretta Lynch, the attorney general. He did that. He made sure it was literally placed in her hands so he could tell her, you can't tell me you didn't get this information about the suppression of the black vote. Now, here's the interesting thing. He gave that material to her in September before they did the deed. And there was no action by the Justice Department. So don't, you know, I mean, yes, there are some congresswomen of color who are going to raise the issue, but the Congressional White Caucus is quite silent. And I'm hoping Bernie Sanders, you know, when I once spoke to the Congressional Black Caucus, there was one pale face in the room, because they don't, you can join the Black Caucus no matter what your skin tone. And the one guy in the room who was not African-American was Bernie Sanders, who joined the Congressional Black Caucus. And
well,
I would like to see Sanders step out now and talk. Oh,
there are two things he doesn't talk about.
We have one national progressive political leader, and his name is Bernie Sanders. And if we lose him, if he's silent, then we are all bound and gagged. And this is important. Now is the time for him to step up. This is not about whether we should be endorsing Hillary Clinton or any of that stuff. Someone has to stand up for the votes that were lost, because Hillary Clinton, as just as Donald Trump said, he said, every 4 years the Democrats come around and expect the vote of the black community, and then they forget all about you. And you know what? The truth, you know what? Sometimes one thing you'll have to say about the Donalds is that he often says the truth, unvarnished. Then he adds in his own lies, because after he said the truth about others, he makes up the lies about his own plans. You know, remember, he's going to change everything for the inner cities of America. We've yet to see the plan except an increase in the number of police and stop and frisk. But he had it right there. The Democratic Congressional White Caucus, it just doesn't give a damn about the black votes that were lost, even though it cost them. And I think one of the reasons is, and this was brought up by some of the African American leaders I've spoken to, not only do they have their own hands dirty with Jim Crow voting in the primaries, where they wipe out black voters to keep control of the party, but yes, that at the center of it is that if everyone voted, you'd have a very different Democratic Party. And the incumbent Democratic leadership, holding on by its fingernails now that the Clintons have been discredited, utterly discredited. They're holding on, the Chuck Schumer league. And they can't let black people vote. In fact, I go through this voter suppression technique called cross-check, which I uncovered in Investigations for Rolling Stone in my film. And I have to say, there's one Democratic state that joined in, New York. Andrew Cuomo and Chuck Schumer of New York really, really fear the black vote. They have more to fear the black vote than the Republicans, because they cannot win primaries. They cannot control that party if you let voters of color vote in New York.
I just want to make the statement. I don't think it's a great idea for us to leave your listening audience feeling, well, there's no point, it's all terrible, nothing can be done about it, because things can be done about it. You look at Standing Rock. I mean, they have been protesting that for, 7 months? And it finally looks as though they are winning. And look at the number of nuclear plants that have been shut. That has happened largely because of you, Harvey, but because of you were able to gather together the grassroots to stand up for it. So the truth is that if the people in this country refuse to go to war, if they refuse to allow the brass to destroy our environment, if they refuse to do all of these things, we will win in the end. And the thing for us to do at this point is to get very, very involved. There's no such thing as the luxury of not being involved. It's our planet, and we have to save it.
Bob Fitrakis in the Heartland, what do you got to say about that?
Well, no, I think there's going to be a variety of actions, not only nationally, but I think there's going to be huge fights going on locally. And I've seen some movement by, fairly moderate Democratic machines under the pressure of Sanders and activists on the ground to move in a progressive direction. I think the bubble burst on neoliberalism and neocons, and it's really a battle now between progressive forces on the left and these reactionary nationalist forces on the right.
Well, Bob, as a political scientist, give us a quick thumbnail of the rise and fall of the Clintons. Are we actually done with them finally? Is that one good thing that has come out of this story?
For the record, I was Governor Jerry Brown's spokesperson in 1992. I led the fight pretty much into my political career. I was a congressman running against John Kasich at the time. I wasn't in Congress, but a congressional candidate. And, I fought him over NAFTA. And, I couldn't figure out. I mean, the left was divided. In many ways, Clinton was kind of like Trump. You had, Bob Kerry and Tom Harkin and Jerry Brown. You had all these progressive populist in the race, and Clinton was the, you know, big money K Street free trade guy. So when he won, and he purged the party here in central Ohio, and he out all the progressives, and you know, but I was trying to figure out how long would it take for free trade, you know, gutting the industrial heartland and sort of, you know, war policies and massive expansion of the U.S. military, you know, for the bubble to burst on that. And it did. I think the Clintons are through in the same way the Bush family are through. The question is, who's going to win the future? And that's a question of, you know, we've broken through American exceptionalism. You know, you got a 74-year-old guy publicly announcing he's a socialist and not, you know, varying in his, you know, critique of corporations. This is a huge breakthrough in terms of American culture. You got young millennial kids out there willing to fight, politically sophisticated, that you know, aren't buying into this Cold War stuff. So I think there's going to be a huge battle for the heart of the heartland.
Well, Greg Palast, your film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, goes to the heart of it in that, you know, we have 15% of the country, that's 1.5% of the country is black, and 15% of the country is Hispanic. And effectively in the 2016 election, the Republican secretaries of state prevented these people from voting. And what Bob points out and you point out is, and Lila, this is as much a threat to the Republican. So in the time we have left, both on this show and on this planet, what are we going to do about this?
Well, I do end the film in Selma, Alabama, for a reason. One, I got a call from a state senator, Hank Sanders, who said that he's been in the state senate in Alabama, and suddenly his name is missing from the voter rolls. And part of the film is the investigation about how a senator can get his name expunged from the voter rolls. One hint is that he is guilty of voting while black. And now the other, but one of the other reasons I go to Selma is that's where the Voting Rights Act was born. Martin Luther King, 50 years ago, crossed that bridge with 35,000 people. Four of them were murdered by the Ku Klux Klan on that march. And thousands arrested, hundreds beaten bloody. And what we learn from that is he didn't have the money, he didn't have the billionaires, he didn't have the power, he didn't have the press, he didn't have nothing. All he had was marching feet and steady, nonviolent confrontation that never let up. It wasn't one day that they crossed the bridge. You know, for 3 months, every day they tried to cross that bridge. Every day, beaten, arrested, every day. And it was that steady confrontation that won the Voting Rights Act, and we'll have to win it back. Because remember, Jeff Sessions, who will now be our Attorney General, has called for the complete abolition of the Voting Rights Act, which King won 50 years ago. So we're going to have to cross that bridge at Selma again, in reality and metaphorically, to win back the right of all people to vote. If we don't have that right, you can forget Standing Rock, you can forget everything. Because if we don't have the right to vote, and take these bums out of office and curtail these dangerous men, fascists, then we are going to have, you know, that's the ultimate problem that we have, is the right to vote. If we can't preserve that, we've preserved nothing. And we just saw, again, how we were abandoned by people like Hillary Clinton, you know, who was happy to get black votes in the primary and then forgot all about it when on election day Jim Crow tactics were used to destroy, to eliminate black voters. Like I said, I was in Detroit. 75,355 votes were never counted. And Trump, that's six times Trump's victory margin. So what we have to do is now say we count all the votes, no matter the color of the skin of the voter. And that's an old rallying point. And a million people died in the Civil War to get that amendment to allow everyone to vote. So we've had this battle every 50 years, and now we have to take on the battle again. If we go to sleep this time, we're done.
Yeah, and Bob Petraeus, the second piece of the equation is the electronic voting machines. If we do get everybody to vote, and Greg Shum is a masterpiece on that subject, how do we get the votes counted?
Well, there's already open source software. The fact that you would allow partisan for-profit corporations to use trade secrets, many of them in the Right to Life movement, count your votes, it means you have non-verifiable elections. Although they do become a bit harder to flip, steal, or hack, or rig, and would be almost impossible if we weren't purging millions of blacks and minority voters. But again, we've got to get the private vendors, these partisan vendors. We don't need it. We need hand-counted paper ballots. And if people are worried about a transition to that, we have open source. You don't need lines of code.
We got to go this next week. Thank you, guys. Lila, thank you, Greg. Yeah. Thank you, Bob. Talk again.
Right.
Okay.
Come back next week.
And the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground.